Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Welcome to Work is Weird Now podcast. Today, we're joined by Donald Ewing, head of commercial finance at National Gas. Donald has spent his career shaping the financial strategy behind some of the UK's most critical infrastructure businesses. At National Gas, he leads commercial finance through major transformation projects and is passionate about using finance as a connector, which is what we'll be talking to him about today. He's also one of the speakers at the upcoming Finance Forum this October and part of our Finance Forum mini-series of the podcast. And at that event, he'll be sharing hard-won lessons on M&A and specifically what makes or breaks an acquisition. So welcome, Donald. It's great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Welcome. Great. So why should we see finance as a connector? And how does this challenge some of the usual associations that people have with finance?
Great question to start with.
Just a small question.
Yeah, just a little bit, isn't it?
We like to ease you in.
Yeah. Stray in. Yeah, no, there's no. Yeah, anyway. I think I'll generalize, and I hate generalizing, but I will generalize to start. And I think finance was often seen as the team with spreadsheets, the kind of heads down in the numbers, and a big emphasis on control. You know, they control budgets, they control spend. They'd often say no, but I think they'd often say no with a smile, just to kind of ease it in a little bit. So they'd often say no with a smile. And they were a very standalone function and not integrated with the rest of the company. It's changed so much. I mean, it's changed so much in the past 5 to 10 years, the way that we operate in finance, the way that finance interacts with the business. And I think where I've seen it work best is where finance kind of acts a little bit like reggae sauce. You know, that sauce that you kind of put on your chicken? Mm-hmm. It's like without it, it's like, it still works. Chicken's still nice without it, but like add a bit of reggae sauce in and it's like kind of sings and brings it together. And that's what finance does. And I think what you don't realize being in finance is that you see much more of the business than you do work in other departments. You see everything going on. It's a unique position that is not seen in other departments, I don't think. And therefore, you've got a huge role to play in finance because you generally sit in all the senior meetings where all the big decisions are actually made and you get real insight into what's going on. And that privilege that you're in actually can be used as a connector. You can use that like, you know, I think I've heard people say it before, like a superpower, a connector to bring people together. I've been in meetings and I've seen the mood music of the exec and the board change so quickly from being like real risk takers to being really risk averse. And it's flipping overnight. And you can just see the attitudes change. Because I mean, I was working on an M&A transaction, which quick plug, that's what I'm going to be speaking about in the Finance Forum next month. But I was speaking with this M&A transaction. I was speaking to the CFO and it was something completely different to the M&A, but I saw his risk appetite change and something that I would normally get passed through him and he'd kind of sign it off and again, get it through the chain. He was asking for more justification on it. And when I asked the reasons behind it, although he didn't explicitly say, you could generally get the feeling that something had changed. Something had changed with the shareholders that were actually kind of making him a little bit more risk averse. And I kind of took that information and I used it with the M&A team. And what we did was we changed our M&A pitch of that specific M&A. And we changed it from one of being like shareholder growth, cash generative. And we changed it to kind of being income protection. And that little shift in dynamics that you're able to kind of feel and tweak help that acquisition get over the line with the board. And that's what finance can do. And that's just not a one-off example. It happens all the time. And really that connector role is so important, I think, but it's really underused in finance. Yeah, it's definitely, finance is such a key role in connecting the business and bringing them together.
I think Alice and I both really smiled with one of your earlier statements, the reggae one, absolutely that one. But the bit before that, when you said finance are often known as the people that say no, but with the smile. And we're both in brand and marketing, right? So we're the money, we set fire to the budgets, right? That's our, the perception of our teams. And I have been on the end of those, no, and the smiles. But do you know, one of my real perception shifts with finance was when I ended up stepping in to lead a big function, and the finance business partner at the time sat me down and was just like, do you know what? Let's not do this in the normal, straight to the bottom. What money can you actually just save? Talk me through what all of these different aspects of marketing does. And we connected, right? So much more about...
Brilliant.
Like, tell me something different. And then it opens up that conversation for me to ask her more about, right, what, is there a drive to give back? Is it like, no, you can't spend that money? Are we just seen as those, you know, the money spenders? And it really just changed that whole perception of each other and other's teams who are an enabling department for a business, right? And it was such it's a real career moment for me. I remember it like it was yesterday.
That's great. I think that's key to finance and kind of what they should do to, you mentioned like that it builds trust and that connection, and they're able to understand your part of the business more to help you kind of get your, what you need to get done a lot quicker. Like I say, like the best thing you can do in finance to build that kind of trust and collaboration, like you were speaking about, I think it's like, is to go out and speak to the business like they spoke to you, but walk in their shoes, see what's going on, be curious and see the challenges that they face on a day-to-day basis, because it builds really good information for finance perspective, because then when they have to speak about the numbers to kind of CFOs or CEOs, kind of they've got a lot more insight into the activities that go on, and then they can help you. They know what you're like and they can help you explain the numbers to you in a way that's relevant to you. I mean, I worked prior to National Gas, I worked for a water company, and I was partnering a part of the business which found and fixed leaks, and the water leaks. Not very sexy, but like really, really important. And so what I did is I went out with the gangs. They're called gangs. It's basically two men in a van that go out and they kind of find and fix leaks. So I started when they started. So like you're starting at like, you know, 6:30, 7 in the morning. And it was December, so it was cold, really cold out in the morning. And I was dealing with customers, kind of with complaints on leaks, having no water supply. I saw the technology that they had to deal with to do their jobs. I understood what was involved in like a short comm pipe repair, which is like one of the most important jobs that they do, the most frequent jobs that they do. And I saw so many opportunities for improvement. And that one visit that I did with that water team gave me credibility in the room with the water management team. I was able to talk their language. I was able to reframe my finance report to be more meaningful for them. And I made it more accessible to those who are on the move, because I realized that, you know, people are out and about quite a lot. They haven't got time to sit down, look at a big spreadsheet or a PowerPoint presentation and see the numbers. And then I championed the opportunities that I saw and tried to get these little small changes through. So like going out and walking in their shoes, like I suppose that person was doing with you, is great for you, but it's great for that person as well. So yeah. Definitely resonate with me that.
So some of the things that you're describing here are not what I would conventionally associate with the personality of a finance person. So I imagine finance people being quite analytical, quite meticulous, detail-oriented, risk-averse. And what you're describing is more around empathy, curiosity, creativity. Do you think that, do you think these are things that finance professionals have but need to tap into more?
Or has the perception got in the way?
Is it a story that finance professionals tell themselves?
There's a little trick. There's a couple of things in finance that goes on. One, you can say no all the time, which doesn't really get you anywhere, but you kind of stamp your ground and your authority and like you can't spend my money. Or you could say yes all the time and then you lose trust in the same process because you can be walked over and you just do everything that you said. A CFO, and this stuck with me and helped me kind of change my mindset. CFO sat me down and said, the key to being a good business partner, and when he meant business partner, he means the whole of finance, because everybody in finance partners somebody. You partner internally, or you can partner externally, or you support the business. So he said, the key to being a good business partner is not saying no, it's finding the right yes. So it's like, yes, but if you do this, this, and this, I can make it work. Yes, but. So it's finding the right yes. And that stuck with me in terms of like, because that's kind of being curious as well, and that gets you trusted, But that's kind of that kind of curiosity and that kind of, yes, but if you kind of give me a little bit more information on this, it'll help me understand and help you kind of help me sign this off. And I think that one statement helped trigger it for me. And it's something I like to instill in all the teams that I work with, is that kind of empathy, partnership, curiosity that kind of brings more than just the numbers to the page. It helps them kind of do their business in a better way, basically.
It reminds me of Simon Lam, who's a guest we've had on several times on the podcast. He always talks about yes and, because if you say yes, but, you negate what you said before the but. But if you say yes and, then you can qualify what you said without making it look like you didn't mean what you said before the but.
Yeah.
So you talk quite a lot about storytelling as well as being a really important skill that finance professionals need to have. Can you talk a little bit more about where you've seen that work really well and what you mean when you say effective storytelling in finance?
Yeah, I mean, I think people speak about storytelling quite a lot, and it's really important. I went on an effective writing course in my last company that I worked for, and it was incredible in terms of what it taught me. It was actually run by a journalist who kind of wrote for national newspapers, and he was saying the way they write journalism is the way you need to write your board reports, your kind of presentations to finance. And he said when he starts writing his journalism report, he'll write a 2,000 words report on it. And the first paragraph tells you everything you need to know. The next paragraph kind of gives a little bit more information on the most important facts. Then it goes down and down and down into the kind of just the nice to haves at the bottom. And he says that's the way that all journalists have to write, because if like a top news story comes in and then they have to cut that to like 500 words, all he does is like takes the workout down to 500. You've got your key points up front. And that for me is the key to storytelling in finance as well. It's kind of get your big messages out front. What are key actions that you need to do or need to drive? And then what are the things that kind of fall under that to kind of back up the story? And I often see, and it's horrible, I often see lazy reporting from finances, and it kind of gets me a little bit annoyed, a little bit passionate about it as well. Like things like costs are over 10% in by my budget this month and 7% over year to date. Statement of fact, and then it's kind of pen full stop at the end of it. That's lazy, it's factual, but it doesn't drive anything. Like they should be telling a more meaningful story to it, like things like, you know, our headcount's increased by 15% because we're preparing for the launch of a new product line next quarter. So this investment has naturally grown our headcount in the short term, for example, but it's aligned to our growth strategy that was signed off. And then you can maybe close it by saying, you know, if we don't get the sales that we expect in the next quarter, then we'll need to revisit our headcount and our growth strategy to kind of make sure that long-term sustainability is there. And it's things like that, like bringing a little bit more meaning to the numbers rather than just stating the number itself, is so important, I think. And I think technology is a huge enabler to storytelling. And I think technology is underused storytelling in finance. And what I would love to see more of is more interactive kind of financial discussions with the business. So where you can basically go into, there's like tools out there, but they're underused, like Power BI and stuff like that's out there just now. But to be able to drill in the moment to find out where that's going in the room and finding root causes and kind of going through reasons behind it. I think for me, that's where finance needs to get to. It needs to stop kind of, here's your PowerPoint presentation or your Word document, and leading the audience into what the answer is. If you had a more interactive discussion with tech, really taking them, letting them drive the discussions. You know the numbers. You let them drive the discussions and help them come to the right kind of conclusion, root cause analysis, what does it mean for future forecast, that kind of thing. I think that'll bring so much more to finance and the business if we kind of lent more in technology and kind of really kind of went to more in the moment storytelling.
Because it'd be more relatable to everybody, that everyone can see themselves in it rather than, oh God, here comes finance bit, switch off, because it's just another, it's going to be another Excel that I'm glazed over. And as being probably a bit too frank there, but it happens. You can see that it just happens, and that people need to relate to things. And that's, I think, comms. That's what our background is, making it meaningful and making it relatable to everybody in that business who shows up every day to work there. How do you do that?
I think you're also describing coaching conversations as well, right? So you're actually encouraging rooms full of people to come to their own conclusions based on how you are guiding the conversation or enabling the conversation. And again, I go back to this whole idea of, do finance professionals have these skills? Is this what they're being trained to do? Or are you finding that younger generations seem to have them more than older generations? Or is there necessary professional development that needs to happen?
Can I add to that as well? Because I think your world is so regulated, and is it CEMA, the route that you charted?
That's what I'm qualified in, yeah. I'm qualified in CEMA finance, yeah.
And there's all of those layers, which to me, I don't know, from the outside looking, I haven't looked into it for a very long time, since uni days, but it's very much finance-led as you'd expect it to be. But is there now that blend of personability, coaching, mentoring, all of that type of work, or is there a gap there?
So I can definitely see it coming through in the younger professionals that are coming through. It's my company and other companies I've been in before. When you get in kind of young graduates, they are, you know, they're digitally fluent, they're, you know, they're purpose driven, they're collaborative, they build fantastic networks so quickly, like with other graduate cohorts and other apprenticeship cohorts, and they're fearless. I absolutely love it, kind of speaking to them, and kind of they're not afraid to challenge anything, and it's really great to see. And with the younger generation, I think it's our job as leaders to kind of give them exposure to the business and encourage that kind of cross-functional thinking. And you said mentoring, you mentor them to be a connector, like the value that they can bring in finance as being a connector, not just a controller. And then I suppose it's our job is to make sure that when they challenge, it's an effective challenge, because it can come across in quite a direct way. How you challenge in the right business environment, there's different ways to challenge in different businesses because they speak different languages, and you're helping them navigate those kind of little nuances. But I think there is a definite gap. You mentioned, is there a gap in the businesses? There's a selection of people that get into finance for a reason, because they want to. They are generally, as we're a population, introverted. So you will generally get people who love in the numbers and do shy away from conversations. And therefore, when they have to give a presentation on something, it's generally quite short and to the point, and it's 7% over budget and it's 10% year to date. And that's it. Please kind of get me out of this position.
Get me off the stage.
Yeah, get me off the stage. I do not want to speak anymore, and don't ask me any questions, anything further. And then there's those that are kind of comfortable in that scenario that don't need as much mentoring. So I think there's a definite gap to kind of help those that probably need a little bit more encouragement, and to understand the value that they can bring to a company by just opening out a little bit more in the right way for them, obviously. But I think there's definitely things we can do there. Yeah, definitely.
Why is it so essential right now at this moment in time that finance serves as more of a connector than it ever has before?
So yeah, another great question. We live in such an incredibly volatile world, as you'll know it, you've seen it, but like sudden shocks that we get on a day-to-day basis are kind of common now. You know, the wars, the trade sanctions, the environmental disasters, political landscape that we got just now, the economy changing so quickly. This is the norm. This is like shocks are the norm. And finance plays a key role in being able to see through that noise and calmly articulate options, calmly look at the scenarios and calmly give recommendations of potential ways through this noise that I don't think a lot of other professions can do as well as we can, because numbers speak, everyone speaks in the language of numbers from up into the board. So it's kind of articulate it all in numbers. And I think you mentioned it before in previous podcasts, but AI is going to help with that as well. It's going to shift how finance operates as well in the future. And it's our job in finance and finance professionals, our job's going to kind of change, I think, from more about kind of reporting to more about connecting the dots, more about the conversations that you hear and then in the boardroom articulating that to the business. How do we relay that change? How can we change that outcome? What can we do differently? And I think finance's role is like, it's going to be even more of a connector in the future, I think.
Is it also harder to do that in some ways, though, in so much as it, from what we understand by virtue of doing some episodes in this series, that the finance function is actually under a lot of more pressure than it ever has been before as well. So sort of shifting priorities, changing goals, you know, sort of all the things that impact your day to day. Does that make it more difficult to be able to step out and do that kind of connective work when you're so bogged down in this detail?
I think in finance, you always feel under pressure for certain reasons. That pressure point changes. So I remember when I first started, it was pressure points on month end and getting the month end numbers done and getting up and getting like a pack physically bound, you know, binding packs for people to hand out to them.
I remember whereas like the ring now binding the pressure machines.
It literally is like a rite of passage. It's like a rite of passage for a finance professional
to have the little tiny squares that just scatter everywhere.
Yeah, they just literally suspend like hours by a binding machine, like getting bits of paper together, and then you miss a section out and you have to start again. Anyway, it's a rite of passage to have to, and that's the pressure because you had to get packs out in the post by a certain day so that people had them for the deadline. And that's a pressure when you're kind of new in finance, whereas now the pressure is kind of a little bit different. You've got all these kind of shocks. You've got the volatile world, and then you've got like this advent of AI coming in. Like, you know, the people say it's a threat, don't they? The threat of AI on their job. So I think the pressure has always been there. I just think it's shifted a little bit. It's just a little bit different in finance now, and it's how we adapt to it, I think, is key.
How do you feel about AI in finance?
Honestly, I think it's absolutely fantastic.
Amazing. We love glass half full people on this pod, don't we? We're always like, yeah.
Literally, like it is so incredible. I don't know how much you did. Like, yeah, I had to review like a share and purchase agreement for potential kind of bid that I'm working on. And I've been working on it throughout. I've been working, negotiating with parties, iterated, changed. And like it's come to final sign-in now. So I was like, can you please review this, Donald, and make sure that you're happy with it? I'm like, going, right, okay, I know what should be in there, but what is in there? And it's all in legalese, isn't it? It's all like clause 3.4.2, and you got to really concentrate. Shoved it into AI, and I said, can you pull out the key risks of this contract? Can you tell me kind of what I should be interested in? This is kind of where I think it is. Is it in the right place? 10 seconds later, I came back with stuff, and highlighted key risks, the stuff that I knew about, which was good, highlighted a new one that we needed to get slightly amended. The wording was wrong. It was phenomenal, really, really powerful. I was like, gosh, blah, this has made my life so much easier. I've now got time to actually go and speak to these other parties to get it changed rather than the 11th hour kind of go to them. So yeah, I think I really embrace it. I think it's going to be superb. I can't wait to use it more.
Amazing. That's great.
That helps with the existential middle of the night dread to hear positive views on it. So yeah. If you could give advice to your younger self about finance as a career, what would you say?
Wow. Don't worry. Firstly, don't worry, Donald. It isn't as dull as everybody says, finance. In fact, I think it's actually quite exciting. So don't worry. And it's a great career and that can go in loads of different avenues. Like, you don't get a lot of professions you can go into that are so transferable in skills that you can work in different professions and just cookie cutter you what you've done in different ways. You can work in different things. Kind of settling myself down into the kind of just the normality. From a behaviors point of view, I would say be curious, be people orientated, as I've been speaking before, change things all the time. It's what I say to people when I recruit people into roles. I say, what lasting legacy are you going to have on this role? What's the next person going to come in, look at your role and go, oh, Laura did that was fantastic, or something really kind of to give it a little bit of, to make it your own, which is fantastic. And take risks as well, because failing as when you're younger is where you learn. Fail fast and learn quickly. But, and this is the big but, because I made a big mistake when I was starting off in finance and I didn't do this and I wish I had done it. If you want to go far in finance, you've got to boringly nail the basics. Okay. Embrace the nuts and bolts of finance, the double entry, the technical stuff, because it's so important. Like, but without it in finance, you'll make mistakes, and those mistakes can cost quite a lot of money for the company if you get them wrong. And I made a mistake, and because I didn't get the fundamentals right and had to learn quickly, and I wish I'd learned in my younger career. So mastering the fundamentals, I think gives you confidence and gives you credibility to grow, to influence and to lead in a finance career. That would be my advice.
Did a finance person just say take risks? Take the risks.
Refreshing. What would you say to organizations who are looking to leverage their finance function or to exploit it to the greatest of its potential?
I listened to the previous podcast that you've done. Becky, I think, was speaking about taking down all job titles and kind of. It was kind of the Stephen, I don't know if you've, earlier in my career, I did read Stephen Covey's book. It's called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. Absolutely fantastic if you haven't read it before. But his statement was, you get the right people on the bus, and then you get the right people in the right seats, which is kind of what Becky was talking about. I think I'd do it in a way to say, like, a practice that I would stop and just totally burn it to the ground if I could do, and just kind of really change the way that people think about finance. And I would totally rip up the month-end process and not have it. I wouldn't have month-end anymore.
We're ripping up a lot on this podcast.
I'm taking risks.
Did a finance person
risks.
Just say that?
Ripping up month end. I'm not going to do all this exec commentary, all these kind of formal packs they have produced that they're out of date as soon as you write them. You normally write them, the board meeting, whatever, it's like 2 weeks after month end. Loads has happened since, and you're reporting on old news, and you've got to reflect the new news, and it's just like it's really outdated process. And I think I've mentioned before, but those interactive sessions that you could have with directorates will really change things. Embrace tech, embrace technology, embrace AI. Let AI kind of take all the grunt work out for you. And you then start to model scenarios. This is what's happened. Here are the potential scenarios that can come from that. What choice of action do we want to do? And how are we going to course correct if it goes wrong? I think we're too, and sometimes in finance, we're very, very rigid in our kind of, we do a month end, we report a month end, we go and speak to the business, we prep for month end. And it kind of goes in cycles like that. And then you do a board meeting and it goes on. I think if we kind of move to a lot more fluid kind of the way that we kind of forecast things through the business and kind of articulate risk or opportunities in the right way, it'll be more dynamic and we'll be able to get change enabled a lot more quicker. So that's kind of what I would do.
Okay.
I don't know if
great.
That answers your question, Alice, but
yeah,
that's
it does. That's really interesting. Like I said, we are slashing and burning all over the place.
We are.
It's weird now. So your event that you're speaking at Finance Forum, what are you hoping people will take away from that session?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of when I was thinking about how to write it, it's now turned into my own personal therapy session. So apologies for people who come into it, but it is kind of I thought about when I was and I'm talking about mergers and acquisitions, and I was speaking about what makes a successful merger and acquisition process from start to finish, from like strategy all the way through to integration of a business. You're buying a business, how to get it through. And like I thought about, well, I could go through all the mechanics of doing this and give them the A to Z of like what does a perfect acquisition. And I thought, I don't think that's what will kind of get the most from the audience. So what I'm going to do, total therapy session, but I'm going to tell you all the mistakes I have made in my career with all the acquisitions that I have done throughout the process and the impact that has, and then kind of replay back then what my perfect acquisition is going to be. So what they can get from me is a real warts and all. This is where I've got it wrong. This is where it's easy to get it wrong. And if you get it wrong at this point in time, this is what can happen over a really long period of time, and really kind of being really open with them. And hopefully they're going to get how to do a perfect acquisition, which is kind of my one goal in life. My next acquisition is going to be perfect. So that's what I hope I'll be able to relay to them.
Sounds like a podcast series, that, Donald, not going to lie.
Positions through therapy or something like that. Is that what I'm going to call it? I don't know.
Amazing. Okay, well, that sounds like a great event. How else can people get in touch with you, reach out to you, learn more about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, so you can catch me on LinkedIn. And please do connect if you want. Message me there if you want to know anything more about what I've done in the past or kind of what I'm going to do in the future. Or if you've got questions that come up when you think, oh, actually, if you're giving a talk on M&A, I'd love to know this. Yeah, definitely connect. I'll meet up, have a chat, have a call. If you're close, we'll have a coffee. Just connect that way. LinkedIn's the best place to grab me.
Sounds great. Well, I got to say, Donald, you're just a vibe. I think that you just sort of like calmed my nervous system down today.
Same.
I know. I can
Thank
see
you.
Why you're a good connector.
And we'll look forward to meeting you at the show in a couple of weeks.
Yeah,
we
look
will also
to it as
be
well.
There.
Yeah.
Well, I hope
Thanks
I haven't
so much.
Rambled too much, guys, because I hope I answered your questions. So
great. Brilliant. Thank you. Really, really good.
Thank you so much.